keeping you feeling good and energized throughout the day with those feel-good vibes, you're tuned into the Evening Jukebox with DJ Raph the Mech.
Good afternoon, Guantanamo Bay. It is Friday, or Fri-yay for those of you who like to subscribe to that. I am DJ Raph the Mech, a.k.a. Petty Officer Raphael McCory, and we are tuned into The Pulse. We've got the hospital team.
I failed.
We've got Ensign Hatfield, we've got Commander McDermott, and we've also got the hospital PAO, Ms. McKamey, with us. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Doing great. It's always happy to be here. We got a new time slot.
We did. I'm so glad that we could accommodate you guys and make sure that we continued in our tradition of the Pulse. So much information that we learn about. And I mean, I think the topic today is industrial hygiene. And I'm not going to lie. I literally had to Google. I was like, industrial hygiene? What are we doing?
I'm with you. I'm thinking, right, is this something you find up in dental, right?
You know, that's a common misconception is that as soon as people hear me say I'm an industrial hygienist, they're like, oh, you clean teeth? I just have some cavities in the back and you look at them. No. Think of me more as like a science-y OSHA person.
Okay.
So,
it's not a real thing. It's voodoo.
It is voodoo. I just go out there and I do magic things.
So like the nerdier side of nerdy?
Absolutely.
Okay. Love that. We love nerds.
Well, so much so that your guy's building is not even attached to the hospital, so no one actually knows what you do or that you exist.
Yes, me and the environmental health officer have been ostracized from the hospital and been put in our own places so that we know our place in the hospital.
That we learned this morning that it's called the chicken coop, at least according to Lieutenant Bean.
So for those that don't know, a little Gitmo history for the hospital is we have multiple chicken coops that have been converted into office space.
Oh, wow.
And through the work of our industrial hygienists, they've now validated that it's okay for you to house people in a chicken coop.
Yes, so the environmental health officer, the industrial health officer, and the goat locker are all put in chicken coops.
Oh, my god.
So I don't know what you think that means about all of us together.
Medicine, but staff education and training are all converted chicken coops. And the old post office, to my knowledge, was a horse stable.
Really?
The old one. Well, they tore it down, so I guess it's
not. Really? Yeah. No, I didn't know that one.
Yeah, it used to be a horse stable. That's what I was told.
I thought the stable was over by old W.T. Sampson, or the new W.T. Sampson.
Fact check me. I don't know. You wouldn't know. No one's going to correct me otherwise.
This is like drunk history almost, but without the alcohol.
Wait, that comes later. It's
that
Friday.
That comes later. Maybe.
Commander McDermott, he's giving me a look right now.
No, it's later. I promise you it's later.
Yeah, I'm going to call you out. But this is your last, Paul, this is your last time with us. How are you feeling about that?
There's a little nostalgia there.
Yeah.
I'm glad we were able to work it out because I know I wasn't able to make it for our show on
your
birthday.
We miss you.
Happy belated birthday.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
But yeah, my last show, which is also Ensign Hatfield's first show. So it's kind of like, I don't know if we're passing the baton or if we're ever going to bring the industrial hygienist back out here. Probably after today, not. Because we're going to get some complaints today. But it's all good complaints.
I get complaints all the time. It's okay.
We'll watch the viewer count, right? Like out on Divots, we'll check and see how many people went out and actually listened to this.
Can you get negative counts? Because I'm pretty sure I want to drive the viewers away.
Well, no pressure. And I don't know if you get stage fright with, you know, public media, stuff like that, but we are now hitting 3 continents and worldwide because now they can download the app
right
and listen to us real time. So you may have 3 listeners right now. So just no pressure. No pressure.
All right. Well,
we're going to get into a lot of great information, industrial hygiene, all the works. We're going to get a little bit into, you know, just your background first, but stay tuned. We've got a lot of music and a lot of great information coming up.
up bands behind. Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. See, we can go where we want to, place where they will never find. And we can act like we come from out of this world, leave the real one far behind. We can dance. Young and so am I. And we can dress real neat from our hearts to our feet and surprise them with a victory cry. Say, we can act if we want to, if we don't, nobody will. And you can act real rude and totally removed, and I can act like an imbecile. Say, we can dance, we can dance, everything's out of control. We can dance, we can dance, they're doing it from pole to pole. We can dance, we can dance, everybody look at your hands. We can dance, we can dance, everybody's taking the chance. It's safe to dance, well it's safe to dance. Yes, it's safe to dance.
We are back, and we're just having a great grand old time here. But let's just get a little bit of information. Talk to you, Ensign Hatfield. What? How long have you been in the service?
2 days. He's an ensign.
No, I've been in a little longer than that. I just hit my 12-year mark.
Oh,
Two months. Yes.
The world's oldest ensign.
There's a legal story behind this one. Please do tell.
They keep putting me up to lieutenant and then bust me back down to ensign. I just can't get out of it. No, I was prior enlisted. I was an AM before I commissioned to be an ensign. I was a helicopter mechanic out in San Diego for most of my time. I did a small stint up in Great Lakes as an RDC. And then during my time with my squadron out in San Diego, I got put in the safety LPO position where I learned, wow, I really like safety, you know? I joined the Navy for various reasons. Mine was because I couldn't attend college very well, and so apparently going to classes is important. I guess.
Not with ChatGPT.
That's true. I didn't have ChatGPT at that time. But I didn't attend my college classes, and I joined the Navy, and so I wanted to do things to protect people. That was the ultimate goal to begin with, even in college. And so I found through safety I can do that. I don't have to go the full medical route. I'm not as good as commander over here. But I protect people in other ways.
So industrial hygiene. You got to... I think we got to crack this nut, right? We got to figure out what the heck is industrial hygiene. Like, what do you do? I don't know. Like, I still don't know, and I visited your guys' office space like 3 years in a row, and I still have no idea.
Excellent. So
tell us what you do.
Industrial hygiene, as I said earlier, the way that I explain to people is that I'm the science side of OSHA. But to be more specific, I measure chemical and physical stressors to workers. And specifically for us, it's only for Navy workers. We do have MOUs and MOAs with outside entities where we sometimes assist them. But while I'm here on Naval Station Guantanamo Bay, I assess Navy UIT commands for the personnel to see what physical exposures you're exposed to, such as noise, vibration, heat, or chemical things such as lead. Lead is probably the most common exposure that I see for people who shoot. So the Marine mm-hmm. Security Force over there, all of them are going to be exposed to lead for them shooting, the security on base, and then there's other odds and ends chemicals out there that I have to look for as well every once in a while.
So how does that play? Because obviously that's very important, is your environment that you work in. But when thinking of that, like, how does that play out, I suppose, is the question. So would someone come to you, and for instance, like, would you come to this radio station and check on maybe the ceiling, the ground, what our noise level, things of that nature? Or how does that play out?
Absolutely. So the Navy has commands assessed into one of three categories. You have your priority ones, your priority twos, and your priority threes. So if you're priority three, you're low, right? You're not super important.
So what am I?
You're a priority two, working over the hospital.
So you're making me sound not important, which is hurting my feelings.
Well, I mean, you got to knock down that Dr. Ego a little bit. It's okay.
It's not a doctor thing. I'm just a person. I want to be a priority one. How do I get to priority one?
I don't think you do.
I don't think you want to be a priority one, because the priority ones are the ones that usually go ahead and kill you, and we're trying to keep you from dying. So the priority ones are going to be the ones that are high hazard exposures. Most of the times, those are going to be the people who are stationed on ships, people such as the security force being exposed to lead with how much they're shooting and stuff. Mm-hmm. That would be a high priority command, because lead, it has all sorts of effects that over a long-term exposure will cause you to have major health health effects. And so I roll up, hey, I'm your industrial hygienist. I'm here to do your survey, because I have an internal tracker for that. Mm-hmm. Every Navy command should have their industrial hygiene survey posted somewhere within their command so they can see what they're exposed to, because it's like a standard OSHA thing. Know your exposures, know what you're exposed to. So you should be kind of knowing when I'm coming in there, because we usually say in the survey, we'll revisit you again in January 2025, 2026, whatever that is. So right now I'm doing a survey for the fire station, and so I messaged the fire captain, and he was like, hey, yes, I'm tracking you. You assessed us 2 years ago, so we'll come over and we'll just have a chit-chat. And I just went over and I talked, and I said, hey, what are your new things? This is what we had for the last assessment. Let me see if any of this has changed. And we go through it line by line, and I was like, at the end of it, has any of this changed? Is there anything that you want to add to this? Is there anything else I should know? And usually it's like, yeah, we actually do this, or no, we don't do that anymore. And I'll just modify it and change it as needed. And if you give me new information where I'm like, oh, wow, I should really pay attention to this. Like, mm-hmm. you have this new ventilation system because you're working with these chemicals over here, and then now they're blowing in your face. That's kind of a big thing. I need to know if that ventilation system is working, or if these chemicals are going to give you cancer in 5 years, or if they're going to melt your eyeballs, you know?
What chemicals melt your eyeballs?
You know, I haven't gotten there yet in my training. Remember, I'm just an ensign.
Two days in.
Yep.
2 days in.
So curious, how often, because I know you mentioned with the firehouse that it was 2 years ago, how often do you guys usually check with a command or whatnot? Would it be like every 2 years, every year?
So that's based off those priorities I was talking about in the beginning. Okay. The priority threes will be every 4 years, priority twos will be every 2 years, and priority ones will be every year annually. Okay. And then if you're exposed to a major chemical, such as lead, we sometimes do quarterly assessments or semi-annual assessments or annual assessments to see if those exposures are still above OSHA limits, because we follow OSHA regulations on how much lead you can be exposed to, for example.
And with that situation, because now I'm curious, like what do you, in that regard, when someone is a priority one or when someone has been exposed, what is the procedure for that? Like, how does that work out?
We try our best, because it's a balance between what you're trying to do for the mission mm-hmm. and keeping you protected, obviously.
Right.
We can't put you up in a bubble. We can't eliminate all exposures. We can't eliminate all hazards. There's no way in any job that you can eliminate all hazards. You're not bubble boy. All right. So we try to make it as practical and as safe as possible. So for lead, we may say, for example, I was doing a lead exposure assessment on the SEAL teams and they're going through BUDS. And the instructors were shooting from a 50 cal machine gun. And so we did lead exposures on all three instructors, and we were like, oh, you guys are all overexposed. So how about instead of you guys not shooting the gun, because this is a real life simulation, we want you guys to get the best training possible, you guys rotate shooting. So you shoot 100 rounds and you hop off for 200. Then someone else jumps in and they just rotate. And then we'll reassess you to see if that works. And so it's things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We may recommend a substitution for bullets. That's kind of hard, obviously.
Right.
But things like that. Eliminations of the hazard is the ultimate goal, but that's not always practical.
So I like to eat lead paint chips. How do you...
It suddenly all becomes clear.
Y'all are laughing, but that's I grew where up, the hair for those that have been on the radio with us before, I grew up in Baltimore City, and lead paint is a
tasty.
Real thing.
Right.
It actually is, and I don't know if you guys know why kids eat lead paint, so I'm going to give you a little bit of, we're going to link all this together here before we go to a break, and before PAO throat punches me again for the third time today. But, so I was renovating a house in Baltimore, and I was sanding down one of the doors. And I probably should have been using a little bit more personal protective equipment, like, you know, ventilator or whatever. Well, I didn't. And I was like, wow, you know, this actually tastes pretty sweet. And I was like, what is that? And I was like, oh, it was the lead paint. So the reason why kids eat lead paint chips is because it's sweet tasting.
Interesting. Did you know that? I did not. I just learned something.
And please don't do any lead testing on me. Let's just let that question remain unanswered.
Oh, okay.
Well, then this next song is specifically for you.
Staying alive.
Well, we are back, and we've been talking a lot of sort of about what an industrial hygienist is, but to break it down a little, because I think we got into like the lead and sort of the more serious things, but I think we started talking a little bit about mold and some certain things that are more conventional or that you see every day, that you can see in essence every day, and how that affects you in the industrial hygienist world. And so when that topic comes up, how are you affected? He's giving me a look right now already.
We actually had a talk of let's not talk about mold, and then suddenly that's the first thing that you launch into. So.
Jeez, he wasn't paying attention.
I still Commander McDermott's thunder is what he's upset. He's actually upset.
I was potentially not going to get into it. And then
here we are. But it's all right. So mold. Well, mold's everywhere, first off,
right,
to begin with. And the way that mold affects people isn't the same, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone has different reactions to mold. Everyone has different sensitivities to mold. And just mold in general, it all may look the same to you, but there's different spores and different genomes and stuff in it that affect us all differently. It's so hard to just go up to mold and be like, yep, that's bad mold. You should get rid of that. So whenever I'm called out for a mold inspection, I usually wait for there to be a worker incident on it. So like I said, I only go out for workers. So a worker has to go to a doctor. A doctor has to be like, yes, you are sick because of a mold-related illness. And then they will get referred to me to go out there and to assess that situation. It's a pretty long and lengthy process. But it's just because if every time someone saw something black on their ceiling tile, right, and that was called out there, that would take up my entire job. There's no way I could get my job.
The humidity, it affects every – you get mold pretty often.
Absolutely.
It's like, what about hazards that are unseen, right? Like maybe somebody has a reaction in a space. They call in Ensign Hatfield, you come and you take a sampling, nothing's found, but yet, you know, the person is still affected within that space, right? Maybe it's an asthma attack, maybe it's like intense itching, like there's obviously a physiological reaction. What happens then?
Well, at that point, so you said we went in there, we sampled, and we found nothing. I would assume that maybe I'm not sampling for the right thing. That might be a moment where I admit that, hey, I don't know everything, and I'm going to reach out to other industrial hygienists that I've made connections with, my industrial hygienist who's above us over the region, and be like, hey, have you guys seen anything that's happened along the lines of this? And then the connections that you make along the way, and as anyone should do in the Navy, connections will help you build your career and build your knowledge base. So where I may be an expert, not in mold, but let's say in mold, someone else may be more of an expert in like sudden asthma attacks in a random workspace where no chemical components are known.
Yeah. So what are the most common hazards you come across in, like, on a naval base?
Besides lead, noise. Absolutely noise. Noise is the big one for everyone. It's the one that everyone thinks that they're immune to, and myself.
Really?
Absolutely. They're like, oh, yeah, it's not a big deal. Or you'll go to your car and you'll blast your stuff and then your ears are ringing up.
There we go. Call me.
It's a lot of personal things come into play on that one. But I came from the aviation community prior. Like, we're one of the worst ones.
Right.
Because that flight deck, if you go on the carrier, always above 140 decibels. That's where almost instantaneous hearing loss can occur. And once you lose your hearing, you can't get it back. So it's one of the things that we encounter the most. It's one of the ones that we fight the most as well. And it's the one that people want to blow off the most as well. Because, oh, it won't happen to me, right? Otherwise, most chemicals people aren't overexposed to. Most of the big ones, you'll see the really severe ones in industrial places, such as the shipyards in Norfolk, the shipyards in San Diego, shipyards in Bremerton. It's the shipyards. The shipyards get the crazy ones. But for the most part, especially here in Gitmo, we should be pretty good.
What about asbestos?
Asbestos is on a case-by-case scenario. So the government, in general, I'm going to say the U.S. government has been pretty good about their asbestos. We don't really do much asbestos work anymore. I think there's still a few areas where people still use asbestos, but it's highly regulated and highly controlled. So if there is a suspected asbestos job, then I would be notified, and we would go out and we would sample the workers, depending on what you tell me that you're doing, and we'll see how much asbestos you're exposed to.
So I think one of the interesting things about industrial hygiene is we link them to the hospital, right? So people think, okay, industrial hygiene is linked to the hospital. But really, they don't, I mean, they do stuff in the hospital, but really there are deployers out of the hospital. So you probably spend more time outside of your office.
Or in the chicken coop.
Or the chicken coop.
Sorry, or the chicken coop.
But you guys are going all around base. Like, we send you there, whereas we bring patients to the hospital, you go to the site to evaluate it, which is a little bit of a different paradigm than how we typically do what you would consider traditional hospital care. But it's definitely a different service line that I don't think most folks typically attach.
Absolutely. So like, I'm not a hands-on provider. I'm not going to touch you. I'm not here to draw your blood. I'm not here to do any of that stuff. I'm here to go to you and just see, hey, are you safe? Can we make you more safe?
Mm. And I know you mentioned that safety was the reason that you really enjoyed it, but what aspect keeps you so passionate? Like, is it just the safety aspect? Or, I mean, it sounds like you have to learn quite a bit of information to just to be competent in this type of field.
Right, industrial hygiene is just a subspecialty of safety, and the safety umbrella is large.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the capstone certifications that we get for safety is a certified safety professional. I have that, and then for industrial hygiene, it's a certified industrial hygienist. So usually, industrial hygienists will try to get both of those certifications. I still have a little bit of way to go to get mine. But if you look at safety in general, there's aviation safety, there's shipboard safety, there's general construction safety, there's fire protection, there's emergency management, there's industrial hygiene, there's ergonomics, and like the list could keep going on and on. And usually when you get in that realm, you become specialized in that realm. But if you get put in a general safety billet, you may have to have knowledge of all of those things, or you have to get knowledge really fast. But the thing that keeps me going about it is because ultimately I like keeping people safe. You know, I don't always get the instant gratification of mm-hmm. being like, hey, that person is safe. But mm-hmm. I know throughout a lifetime of doing it, I can see that, yes, I probably, if they listen to what I told them to do, I understand how military people and just people work in general. If they follow the precautions that I put for them, then they're protected from what they need to be. And on top of that, it's an evolving science. We always get new data that's going to change something. So someday, maybe like, oh, well, we weren't protecting them enough. We need to do a little more on this one. Or maybe we're overprotecting them. We can bring them back down a little bit and let them relax some. So I enjoy that. It keeps me on my toes. It keeps me engaged. And it makes me want to be the best for my clients.
Love that. Well, stay tuned. We've got some more coming up for you.
Step one, you say we need to talk. He walks, you say sit down, it's just a talk. He smiles politely back at you. You stare politely right on through. Some sort of window to your right. As he goes left and you stay right. Past his defense without granting innocence. Lay down a list of what is wrong. Things you told him all along. Pray to God he hears you. And pray to God he hears you. Two things, you will admit to everything.
All right, well, we are back with the Pulse.
Boom, boom.
I was ready for it. Boom, boom. You missed it again.
Oh, sorry. Dang. I'm a little slow, all right?
A little bit. We'll give him some time. Eventually, he'll catch up. Love that. So, you know, I was mentioning earlier how it's interesting because, in essence, a lot of this is knowledge-based and theoretically based. It's not like a lot of the you're in your face or, in essence, physically taxing, for lack of a better term, when speaking about industrial hygiene, but it is still pretty cool to hear about and recognize that you guys are making sure, in essence, that our environments are safe while we're working in them. And so, how do you get into this position? Like, how was your journey in getting here? I know you mentioned earlier you were first aviation, and then you commissioned. But what was that experience for you?
Well, that experience for me was the backstory is that I got put in as a safety LPO. Right, so took over safety. It's an aviation. I'm not sure on the medical side or any other communities, but for aviation at the time, it was safety is a career killer. You're going to hate it. You're never going to put on chief and everything like that. But I've always taken it and challenges like that, and I've learned that you make the most of it and you'll get the most out of it. Mm. So I went in there. I learned. I really enjoyed just general safety. It's like, hey, we're doing fall protection. We're doing fire prevention. We're doing stuff like that. And I was like, how do I make this into a career? And I could not find for the life of me any safety position in the military that was just pure safety, because I kept looking for safety officer. You see safety officer on a carrier, safety officer on a sub, and it's always a submariner or a pilot. And I'm like, well, I don't want to be either one of those. So eventually I just went to school to get my safety degree, and I was like, well, maybe I'll make the most of it outside of the military. Mm-hmm. And while I was up in Great Lakes, I learned that there were industrial hygienists who came and looked at the firing range where the recruits would go, and they would shoot. And I was like, I don't know what an industrial hygienist is. And so I went over there and I shadowed one of them, and the guy happened to be a retired Army, and he's like, yeah, we had those in the Army, and so maybe you can do it for the Navy. And so I looked industrial hygiene for the Navy, and there was industrial hygiene officer, straight up industrial hygiene officer. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, maybe I can apply for it. And at the time, and still currently, they were like, you need an ABET accredited industrial hygiene degree, preferably a master's of public health.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, well, I have a bachelor's of science in occupational safety, but that's kind of the same. Mm-hmm. And so I ran with it. I was like, you know, the worst thing that they're going to tell me is no. So the commissioning program that I went through is the Medical Service Corps In-Service Procurement Program, which is MSCIPP. And I went into it, and I built my package and everything. And when it came to the interview portion, which I think is probably the most important part, is that I spoke on that shortcoming, because it's laid out in the program authorization saying you should, and I highly emphasize should, you should have this degree. And I'm like, hey, I know I'm interviewing you, but I don't have that degree. I have this degree. So it's kind of the same. It's kind of not the same. And I think that usually started off our conversations pretty well, because they knew that I was being honest and I was being forthcoming with them. And I guess it worked out, because now here I am, I'm an ensign.
Well, it's always nice to know that your safety officer, that your soon-to-be safety officer, is honest.
It is kind of a big thing. I would imagine you'd also want your doctors to be the same way.
Right.
So, yeah, jumping into the medical field, forthcomingness and being honest about stuff is pretty important.
Well, there was one thing I wanted to circle back around to real quick. When we were off air, we were chatting about, you're like, oh, I don't get to see the fruits of my labor. Like, this is all stuff. So someone doesn't go deaf or someone doesn't go blind from chemical. That you don't necessarily get to see that.
No.
But I would disagree with you for 1 minute. So one of the things that's been really effective and helpful for our hospital is our IH program, our industrial hygiene program. And we're a Joint Commission accredited facility. And we're very proud of that. But if you really look at what industrial hygiene helps us do, it's keep our facility safe. And the perfect example I can give you is, you know, we have an old hospital. It's 66, 67 years old. It's old. It needs a lot of love, and it needs a lot of assessment of what needs to be repaired. So when we go through our operating rooms and our sterilization processes, we need to make sure that the ventilation is good and it's being measured accurately. And whenever we need that assessment done, we need IH to help us out with that, so that we can continue to guarantee that we're providing sterile operating rooms and sterile processing and making sure our devices are accredited. And they've always been great with doing that, which is one of the reasons we were able to maintain our accreditation and why we continue to be able to boast that we don't have surgical site infections. We don't have surgical, you know, any really infections that come out of our ORs, which is just really impressive that we're continuing to boast that. So I would argue that you do get to see the fruits of your labor. And the fact that we have an accreditation and we continue to keep our patients safe and not have surgical site infections and process our stuff. So thank you for that. That is your team's work that does that.
I appreciate that.
You know, you've been here for 2 weeks.
No, yeah. Couldn't let it go.
Sorry. I was trying to get him a little bit of a nose, but I had to stop him a little bit.
You're doing great, but not you.
Not yet. Don't screw it up.
Ensign Butterbar. No, but yeah, no. You actually make a great point, and so thank you on that for that new perspective, because I'll think about that the next time I do the events, because they are actually coming up within the next month or two.
They are, and I bring that up just to remind you that you have an appointment to take care of our ventilation.
Yes. Thank you.
So he's putting you on the spot. Is what he's actually. You
see, in front of the entire Guantanamo Bay.
All four people who are listening.
He needs to do our ventilation system. Rat him out.
But that is, I mean, that really speaks to just how important how important you guys really are in that aspect, because that is, I mean, 60 years?
Over 65.
That's pretty incredible.
Senior citizen.
Exactly. Precisely.
It's eligible to retire.
And to have no issues with that at all. That is incredible.
Yeah, it's Medicare eligible.
He's just running with it today.
Do you think we should apply for it at the hospital?
We should.
Just under the hospital?
No, because that's a different accreditation if they're Medicare or something.
Oh, okay. The CEO's going to be calling me soon. Like, shut up.
Well, is there anything else that we've talked quite a bit about the industrial hygiene and just how important you guys are. Is there anything else that maybe we hadn't discussed that our listeners would like to know, or maybe that they should know or be aware of?
Well, I think the one thing that people should know is that I'm not there to hem you up. I'm never there to get you in trouble. People see me come in and they're like, oh, industrial hygiene, you're doing the teeth thing, ha ha ha. But they also see me as a safety guy, and usually safety gets a bad rep, because they're like, oh, he's going to see me not wearing my hearing protection, or he's going to tell me to do this, or he's going to tell me to do that, and blah, blah, blah. And like, I get it, because I was a maintainer once upon a time. I turned wrenches, I got dirty and greasy, and it's like, man, shut up and let me do my job. But I'm not there for that. I'm more of saying, hey, let me just find ways for you to not be in trouble. So go out there, protect yourself. I'm there to actually help you. I'm not there to say you're doing something wrong. Seaman Timmy over here is being bad. I'm saying Seaman Timmy should protect himself for his health.
That's a good point. I mean, a lot, especially when you're younger, you tend to just be like, I'll be fine. Like, I don't really have to listen to this guy, but like, it's really important, especially.
Still do that.
Yeah. I could tell you from.
But I'm still young too. So.
I've been told once you start hitting your mid 40s, these things start falling off a little bit, you know.
So. Right? I've heard that.
I've been told. This is just what I'm hearing.
I've heard some similar things, and I'm not looking forward to, especially my ears. My ears, I might have needed you about 10, 20 years ago.
Oh, well,
I might have. Lots of headphones later. I might have needed that assistance. But so much great information today. Thank you guys so much for stopping by, and super glad to get to learn something new about a different type of medical patient safety that you really wouldn't hear too often about.
Because they're in a chicken coop.
Before we close out this show, though, I want to give a proper nod to... I see the eyebrows going up already, and it's not our Master Chief. that's good. That's a good imitation. CMC, he's impersonating you. I saw it.
I am not.
But I wanted to give a nod to Commander McDermott. This is, what, 25th show that you've done or so? That when there was no PAO, this billet was gapped for a while. And he stepped in to embarrass the hospital or himself, I don't know, publicly. I should say publicly. But in all seriousness, you know, the voice that you share, whether you're in the hospital, whether you're in the community, and the way that you lead people, the way that you share information, I really admire it, and I appreciate working with you. Somebody else let me $20 later for saying all this stuff. But I just wanted to say I'm so sorry to see you go, but I'm excited for you. There it is. Thank you.
Really
cough up that money,
bucks.
That big O5 money.
Right.
Sad to see you go, but excited for you, and I'm going to be watching that 06 list in hopes that we see your name on it real soon.
Okay. Fingers crossed.
Okay, I'm not getting my $20. I just want to say thank you to the Radio Gitmo family. This has been one of the highlights of my tour out here. It's been a long 3 years, but it's been a great 3 years, and got to meet a lot of the great Radio Gitmo folks. And just so you know, I got to hire our current PAO, and I think I've had some pretty good hires here, and you're definitely one of them, so thank you.
Well, super glad to have had you here. I mean, what a fun spirit to be around. And I do mean that sincerely. Such great energy. And it's really nice, especially at a hospital, to have someone with such great energy who's so lively and funny. Super
even
fun.
After my mid-40s.
I was going to say humble and kind, too, but never mind. Scratch that.
Let's keep it honest. We got honest people.
I said sincere.
Here.
I said sincere. We're going on the high note. Well, thank you guys so much for stopping by. I really appreciate having you on this beautiful, fabulous Friday. I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your time and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
This is a public service announcement. This is only a test. Emergency evacuation protest. May impair your ability to operate machinery. Can't quite tell just what it means to me. Keep out of reach, etch it, and touch it. Talk to stranger. Get your philosophy. Alright.
authority. Warning, live without warning. I say warning, live without warning. I say warning, live without warning. I say warning, live without warning. This is a public service announcement. This is only a test.
It's Friday, so I'm still talking about Safe Ride Gitmo, who is going to be here tonight from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m., both tonight and tomorrow. All you got to do is call 904-601-601. 7426. Once again, that number is 904-601-7426. They'll pick you up, no questions asked, and get you home free of charge. That's going to be all for me today. We had a great hour with The Pulse, but don't worry because MC Chevy is up next to give you all the hits you love, update you on weather, movies, and MWOR events for the weekend. So be safe and have a great rest of your weekend.